Thank you very much. All of you in my audience know how passionate Americans are about football, baseball, basketball, and other kinds of sports. Television and radio broadcast thousands and thousands of sporting activities every year in the United States. Complete sections of America's most prominent newspapers devote large sections of their papers to the preceding day's games. There are dozens, perhaps hundreds, of magazines devoted to golf, racing, tennis, and such like. In all, hundreds of millions of words about sporting events are spoken or written every day. It makes one wonder if Americans are not like the first century Romans of whom Juvenal spoke. Two things only the people anxiously desire, bread and circuses. By circuses, Juvenal meant entertainment. Are not millions of Americans in that position today? We desire something to fill our bellies and to keep us entertained. I want it to be plainly understood that I am not anti-sports, whatever the sports are, although there are some games in which I have no interest. I like to watch the Atlanta Braves. I even enjoyed watching the Braves when they were losing more games than they were winning. When my family and I lived in Dalton, Georgia, we occasionally drove to Atlanta for Braves games. My sons still drive to St. Louis or to Atlanta to watch the Braves. I like to watch Michael Jordan play basketball, just as I like to watch Dr. J, Larry Bird, Bill Russell, and other superstars. I almost never watch an entire game of basketball or football or baseball. I sometimes watch the first few minutes of the game and then return for the last few minutes. In other words, I enjoy some sporting events, but I am not an avid fan of any of them. Well, except the Tennessee Vols. Does it bother you that when you see talented sports figures behave like spoiled brats or as criminals? Can you believe that a baseball player would spit in the face of an umpire and be almost totally ignored for such immoral behavior? He should have been driven out of baseball, or at least suspended for 2 or 3 years. Billy Martin, manager of the New York Yankees, on more than one occasion, kicked dirt on an umpire. Billy Martin was a talented player and manager, but he should not have been allowed to remain in baseball after such atrocious acts. Players and managers, such as I have mentioned, are a national disgrace to sports and to the human race. All of us have been embarrassed at the disgusting behavior of Dennis the Menace Rodman. And I'm not just speaking of his outlandish hair color or his zoot suit clothing. If the management and players of the Chicago Bulls can live with Dennis's antics, I have no problem with them. However, I do have some serious objections to his obnoxious and violent behavior. In January of 1997, Dennis Rodman kicked a courtside photographer. Dennis was apparently frustrated when he fell into the crowd alongside the basketball court and took out his frustration on the photographer, who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. If this were the only time Dennis Rodman behaved like a pagan, that would be serious, but he has done so on several occasions. I cannot understand why any organization, sporting or otherwise, would keep such a person in its employment. Dennis Rodman's conduct does not help the public's image of professional sports. The NBA suspended Dennis Rodman for 11 games and fined him $25,000. Of course, fining a multi-millionaire a few thousand dollars is of no consequence. His suspension for 11 games may have cost him as much as $1 million, but that does not seem to bother Dennis Rodman. David Stern, commissioner of the National Basketball Association, demanded that Dennis Rodman tell him why he should be reinstated. Mr. Stern said, "Until Dennis can provide meaningful assurances that he will conform his conduct on the playing court to acceptable standards, including not placing others at physical risk, his suspension will continue. Rodman's agent, Dwight Manley, thought the punishment was excessive and unfair. What do you expect of an agent who makes a great amount of money from each player he handles? The truth is, Dennis Rodman's punishment was much too light. He should have been arrested for assault and battery and suspended from basketball permanently. After all, he is not a 15-year-old high school athlete. In May of 1997, there was a bench-clearing brawl in New York City at a game between the New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. P.J. Brown of the Miami Heat grabbed Charlie Ward of the Knicks and flipped him upside down along the baseline during the fourth quarter. He claimed he had to do it to protect himself. It was inexcusable and ridiculous to witness the fighting of these grown men. Patrick Ewing, Allen Houston, Larry Johnson, John Starks, and Charlie Ward of the Knicks were suspended for one game. One game. P.J. Brown of the Miami Heat was suspended for two games. In addition to the suspensions, Brown was fined $1,000. Charlie Ward was fined $6,000. Ewing, Houston, and Starks were fined $2,500 each. Eighth grade boys or girls, or even high school seniors, might be excused, but not 28 to 30-year-old men. Fights on a playing field ought to be treated as they are in a business or on the streets of our cities. The fighters ought to be jailed and tried for senseless violence. Latrell Sprewell, who attacked and tried to choke his coach, was suspended for one full year, fired from his position with the Golden State Warriors, and lost his $25 million contract with the Warriors. That was not enough punishment, although it probably was more than many fans wanted and certainly more than the players' union wanted. He should have been arrested, tried, and convicted of his violent behavior. That is the way we treat other criminals. Why should multimillionaire basketball players be treated differently? Binding arbitration has been used in settling the differences between Sprewell and the National Basketball Association. The arbitrator, John Feerick, shortened Sprewell's suspension, restored the remainder of his contract, and required the Warriors to take him back. Obviously, they will be able to trade him if they can find anyone with little enough judgment and discernment to have him. I'm aware that Sprewell apologized to the coach he tried to choke, to his teammates, and to the public. That certainly was a step in the right direction, but that is not adequate. Grown men do not go around choking others without having to pay the consequences, even if they are million-dollar basketball players. The Tennessean and I seldom agree on any moral issues. But as I was preparing this lesson on the ethics of professional sports, the Tennessean, Friday, March the 6th, 1998, published an editorial on the theme, Message of Sprewell, Stars Can Do No Wrong. One of the conclusions the editors of the paper reached is spelled out in this statement. Player should have been charged with assault. The paper says the decision by arbitrator John Feerick sends the wrong message to all our young people who play in any sport. The message is that you can attack your coach or your boss if you disagree with him, and nothing much will be done. Commissioner David Stern said it best. The answer is now well established. You cannot choke your boss and hold your job unless you play in the NBA. And you are subject to arbitrator John Feerick's jurisdiction. Page 10A. But the Sprewell incident is not so serious as I have made it out to be, is it? After all, we are speaking of professional sports, not real life. The fights in hockey, in football, and in other sports are nothing more than boys getting angry and giving each other friendly punches. Anyone who thinks that has not seen the brawls which occur in every professional sport and in many amateur sports as well. Such fighting and brawling have reached the point where they must be stopped. if not by the controlling associations and players' unions, then by the law in those states where the teams are domiciled. There are laws against violence, and these must be enforced in every sporting arena in our nation. It is time that civil law put a stop to such inexcusably foolish behavior. Millions of America's young people look up to famous sports figures as models. What American boy does not want to be a Henry Aaron, or a Joe Montana, or a Michael Jordan? They not only would like to make the fabulous amounts of money these men receive, I almost said earn, but they do not earn that money. But they would like to be in the spotlight for their achievement. When they see the powerful and famous basketball players or football players acting like rogues and rascals, what kind of example are the players for our young people? Will the influence of a Latrell Sprewell or a Charles Barkley or a Dennis Rodman elevate the moral values of America's children and young people? Will our country experience less crime or more when these superstars are allowed to commit serious crimes and get by with it and even be glorified for it? Would it surprise you that some pretty prominent people think Sprewell and Barkley are products of their racist upbringing? According to some sociologists, these men are not responsible because they never learned to play by the rules. The black mayor of San Francisco, Willie Brown, reportedly suggested that Coach Carlissimo of the Golden State Warriors may have deserved choking. Mayor Brown appealed to Jesse Jackson to investigate the incident. Sprewell's lawyer, Arne Tellem, could hardly believe the actions of the Warriors and the league. Tellem said Sprewell's punishment was totally excessive and out of bounds of any precedent in team sports history. We expect lawyers to defend their clients, but we should expect lawyers to have better judgment and higher moral values than that. I have no idea if Latrell Sprewell has any religious training, nor do I know if P.J. Carlesimo of the Golden State Warriors is a religious man. But would it not have been better to seek some kind of resolution of their misunderstanding before it erupted into open conflict? There are dozens of arbitration services across the United States. Surely Sprewell and Carlesimo could have afforded to bring someone to settle their differences. What if all who have difficulties in personal relationships would follow the plan Jesus gave in Matthew 18:15-17? I'm aware that Jesus was speaking of members of the Lord's kingdom, but the plan for resolving personal difficulties would work in other cases. If you have a personal problem with a brother or a friend or a family member, go to that person in private and try to settle your differences between just the two of you. In many cases, perhaps most, no further negotiation will be necessary. But if the initial contact does not work, you need to ask someone else to work with you. If that does not work, then ask more than one person to help. That kind of approach would surely help those who are having disagreements, whether in sports or in the business world or in the home. We all need to learn to get along as well with our fellow men as possible. The scriptures are literally full of advice on human relationships. Will you please think about the following passages? Perhaps no passage in all of God's book, from Genesis to Revelation, has helped people to get along better than what we commonly call the Golden Rule. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, "Therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do you even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Matthew 7:12. I have no idea how long the trouble between Sprewell and Coach Carlissimo had been brewing, but I get the impression it may have been for some time. What if one of the men had gone to the other and said very simply, "I know we're having some misunderstanding. I want to treat you in every situation like I would want you to treat me. I'm not telling you that such an attitude will always remove differences, but I know it will go a long way. Obviously, the real difficulty is getting both to play by the same rules. Would it help if owners of teams, managers, coaches, and other personnel would have special sessions where these matters are discussed? In some cases, they may do it, but so far, there is little evidence of it. One of the problems with people like Latrell Sprewell, Charles Barkley, and other professionals is lack of self-control. Sprewell became so angry, he was dangerous. Spitting in a referee's face or kicking dirt on an umpire are evidences that someone's emotions are out of control. We expect such behavior of 2-year-olds, but not of 30-year-olds. The Bible has much to say about self-control. The King James Version often uses the word temperance, but the word in the Greek is self-control. Self-control is listed as one characteristic of the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5:23. Peter gives a list of graces Christians should cultivate. Among these is self-control. 2 Peter 1:6. I know these would be difficult for men and women who do not have the proper motivation to develop, but we all could do better than most of us do. Ball players, business people, family members, and church members should work at incorporating good values, biblical values, into their lives. Self-control must be exercised in every area of our lives, but none is more important than controlling our tempers. Latrell Sprewell must have become angry enough to kill his coach. In fact, he apparently tried to do it by choking him. He left the gymnasium where they were playing and then returned to punch his coach. I know it is not easy for many of us to control our tempers, but civilized people learn to do that, or they are not welcomed in most circles. The Bible does not condemn anger under all circumstances, but it does demand that we control it. Be angry, Paul said, and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Ephesians 4:26 and 27. How absolutely inexcusable it is for professionals to lose control of their temper or their tongues. Could it be that many professional basketball players are paid so much money they believe they have complete freedom to do as they will? Many of these men act like prima donnas. They do not want anyone telling them what to do or what not to do. They need to learn that no one can live without some restrictions, and that includes professional sports figures. Would it help if the men who have strong moral values and who are in control of their behavior would go to those men who are troublemakers and reason with them about their conduct? Peer pressure can often be effective, even with grown men and women. Unless there are some changes in all professional sports and in some amateur sports, the American people may become disgusted and refuse to support these violent men. I know I have no desire to watch Latrell Sprewell or Charles Barkley or any other player, professional or otherwise, who behaves so abominably. I urge all Americans who love sports to apply pressure to anyone who refuses to live by the rules. We can make a difference if we speak out against violent athletes and if we refuse to buy tickets to their sporting events. Incidentally, that includes hockey as well as basketball and football. There is never any excuse for heathen behavior in any arena. Will you please join me in speaking out against violence in sports and elsewhere? Thank you for listening, and may our Heavenly Father bless you.